Jennings goes to school. Beware of the thing. Mr. Wilkins did not like Fridays. He had to take Form 3 for 2 lessons before break and again immediately afterwards. By the end of the second lesson, he was beginning to send out tremors indicating that an earthquake might be expected at short notice. I tell you, he fumed at a bemused Mr. Carter during break, Jennings and Form 3 are turning my hair grey. When I've thought of a suitable punishment, that class is going to get it in the neck. Mr. Carter was glad when the telephone interrupted this tirade. However, he was not glad to hear the news from Mr. Parkinson at Bracebridge School. There had been German measles at the school recently, and they'd only just discovered that the quarantine period would not expire until the following week. Tomorrow's football match would have to be cancelled. Jennings will be upset, observed Mr. Wilkins when Mr. Carter replaced the phone. Keen as mustard, and a jolly good little player he is too. Still, if the game's scratched... Mr. Wilkins broke off, as an idea flashed into his mind. The idea took root and grew, spreading its branches and flowering profusely, until he was almost dazzled by its brilliance. Did we have to write our geography prep in our book, sir? Jennings asked Mr. Wilkins at the beginning of the next lesson. But where else would you expect to write it? On the ceiling? There was an air of confidence about Mr. Wilkins which passed unheeded by the boys. No, sir, said Jennings. I wondered if we just had to learn about Australia and not write an essay. Mr. Wilkins glared. So, you haven't written an essay, eh? The whole class will come in for 2 hours' detention tomorrow afternoon. Oh, sir, said the whole class. Temple put up his hand. Sir, you can't keep us in tomorrow, sir, because of the match, he said. And even if we're not in the team, we have to watch it, sir. The head said so. You will not be playing Bracebridge School tomorrow, Mr. Wilkins announced. You can consider the match cancelled. The news travelled fast, and by lunchtime, Jennings' name was mud. Only Derbyshire remained faithful, and together they wandered across the playground after lunch and round the corner to the yard behind the kitchen. Robinson, the odd-job man, was there, wrenching apart a crate marked Jamaican produce. Derbyshire watched with interest. Look out! Robinson shouted suddenly. There, sidling furtively out between the bars of the crate, was an enormous and evil-looking spider. Wow, said Jennings, enchanted. You've got a stowaway. I vote we capture him and don't you touch him, warned Robinson. Poison, most like. He aimed a blow with a piece of wood. Don't kill it, Robinson, urged Jennings. It might be worth a lot of money. You know, an extinct species. I knew a chap got bit once. Arm swole right up. Had to cut his sleeve to get his jacket off of him. Snake bite, that was. They're all the same, these foreign reptiles. Deadly, that's what. Nevertheless, Jennings' plea for clemency in the name of scientific research prevailed, and the spider was eventually trapped in Derbyshire's pencil box. The idea was to show it to Mr. Carter, who knew about such things, but repeated knocks on his door produced no answer. The dormitory was out of bounds in the daytime, but no one was about, so they decided to go there. Jennings opened the box and clamped an inverted tooth glass over the captive. Wow, isn't he a beauty, gasped Jennings. Massive, hairy legs. The spider seemed safe enough with the pencil box now acting as a roof, so they slipped a piece of chocolate into the glass, in case the prisoner should feel hungry, and went downstairs to the library to consult the encyclopedia. When the bell rang for afternoon prep, Derbyshire was absolutely bursting to tell everyone the news. It's either a tarantula or a bird-eater, and if it's not that, it's so rare it's extinct. Robinson says that if it bites you, your arm swells up and they have to cut your coat sleeve to get it off. Your coat, I mean, not your arm. After evening prep, Jennings went to Mr. Wilkins' room to plead with him to alter his decision about cancelling the game. But there was no reply to his knock, so he decided to call back later and pass the time in watching Derbyshire's spider. It certainly was a magnificent specimen. But how stupid they would look if it turned out to be harmless after all. Surely Mr. Carter would know. Jennings transferred the spider to his soap dish, and leaving the tooth glass and the pencil box as he had found them, hurried off to Mr. Carter's room. "My word, he's a fine fellow," said Mr. Carter. "Where did you get him?" Jennings explained, and then watched in horror as Mr. Carter picked the spider up and held it in the palm of his hand. "Sorry to disappoint you," he said, "but this chap wouldn't hurt a fly. Or rather, he would hurt a fly, but he wouldn't hurt anything else." "I'd better put it back in the tooth glass then, sir," Jennings said. "Derbyshire'll be worried if he thinks it's escaped." The telephone rang as Jennings was making for the door. "Hello," said Mr. Carter. "Who?" "Bracebridge School." "Oh, yes." Jennings started guiltily at the mention of Bracebridge, and the soap dish slipped from his hand and fell open on the carpet. The spider made a dash for liberty and took cover behind a bookcase. Quickly, Jennings knelt down to cut off its retreat by blocking the bookcase at one end. It was not that he meant to listen to Mr. Carter's telephone conversation, but he couldn't go while the spider was still at large, and he found it impossible to help overhearing what the master was saying. It seemed that the football game was not to be cancelled after all. Something about German measles and a mistake with the quarantine period. The boys concerned were fit to play and would arrive at 2:30 tomorrow as previously arranged. Jennings' brain was spinning, but his thoughts were interrupted by Mr. Carter, who had replaced the receiver and turned to find Jennings kneeling by the bookcase. Jennings explained how the spider's bid for freedom had delayed him, and together they retrieved it and put it safely back in the soap dish. "By the way, Jennings," Mr. Carter said, "that phone call was a private conversation between Bracebridge School and me. Do you understand?"
"Yes, sir, but what's going to happen tomorrow when they turn up?"
"Never you mind. You're late for dormitory and you haven't changed into your house shoes. Off you go, do it at once." A few minutes later, Mr. Carter caught up with Mr. Wilkins in the staff common room and told him of the latest telephone message from Bracebridge School. Mr. Wilkins appeared stunned by the news.
"What am I going to do?"
"I think you'll have to find a reason to let them off," Mr. Carter said, doing his best to conceal an amused smile. At the first sound of the dormitory bell, Derbyshire led the way upstairs. With Temple, Venables and Atkinson pressing close behind, he flung wide the dormitory door and made a beeline for the tumbler on the shelf.
"Oh, no! It's escaped!"
"What?" Aghast, the spectators pressed nearer, and, as the evidence of the empty glass confirmed the tidings, they stepped gingerly away, out of range. Leaving the others making a somewhat nervous search, Derbyshire went to display a warning notice on the door. Using a piece of white chalk, he began, "Beware of the..." But without the encyclopedia to refer to, he was uncertain how to spell tarantula, and there was also the doubt that the spider might belong to some other species anyway. Finally, he wrote, "Beware of the thing." The school clock struck 8. Down in the locker room, Jennings suddenly realized he'd wasted 10 minutes in changing his house shoes. True, he had spent most of the time in giving the spider an airing, but now he would have to hurry if he was to be in bed before the bell. Clasping the soap dish with the spider inside, he made his way upstairs. He paused to read Derbyshire's notice. "Beware of the thing." What on earth did that mean? When he opened the door and saw Derbyshire, Atkinson and Venables standing on their chairs as though in fear of some rising tide, a slow smile spread across his face as he realized what had happened. "Well, you are a windy lot," he said scornfully as he placed the soap dish on the shelf above his bed. "Fancy being scared of a little tin pot spider." He laughed contemptuously as he took off his blazer and shoes. "You're just a swank," said Venables, but he was unable to conceal a trace of admiration in his voice. "I'm staying here till Wilkie comes to tell us what to do." "Oh, goodness," said Jennings, his enjoyment ebbing visibly. "Does Wilkie know about this?" "Bod's gone to fetch him," said Atkinson. Jennings thought for a moment. It would not improve matters if he were now to be held responsible for this latest disruption of the school routine. Nor were Derbyshire and the others going to be too pleased to find out that the spider was actually harmless. The best thing to do, Jennings decided, was to release the spider and allow one of the others to discover it, so that it could then be disposed of without anyone suspecting its non-poisonous qualities, and he would be free to open up the vexed question of the detention. While nobody was looking, he slipped the lid off the soap dish. But nobody had noticed the spider when, heedless of the notice on the dormitory door, Mr. Wilkins strode in, followed by Temple. "All right," Mr. Wilkins said, seizing a hairbrush. "We'll have a thorough search." He moved towards Jennings' bed and prodded at a dressing gown. By now, the spider was performing a ceremonial war dance on the shelf just above his head. Then Temple saw it.
"Don't move, sir," he gasped. "Don't even bat an eyelid, sir. It's on the edge now. It's taking off. Oh, sir, it's touched down on your shoulder."
Out of the corner of his eye, the master caught his first glimpse of the spider. It was on his right shoulder and walking towards his collar. Mr. Wilkins, who knew nothing of spiders and who did not believe in taking risks, froze. Rigid and motionless he stood, and the spider did the same. For 5 seconds, both Mr. Wilkins and the spider might have been statues. Then Jennings approached, with hand outstretched.
"Don't touch it, boy," warned Mr. Wilkins.
But I know how to handle it, sir. I can hypnotize it, sir. Honestly.
Jennings stared hard, and the spider returned his gaze. Then he gently picked the creature from Mr. Wilkins' collar and placed it in a tooth glass. For some seconds, the spectators were dumbfounded. Then the dormitory was unanimous in its praise.
"Well done, Jennings!"
Thank you very much, Jennings. I'm grateful," said Mr. Wilkins. Of course, I could have coped with it quite easily, but very plucky of you. It does you credit."
"That's all right, sir," Jennings replied. I didn't want you to suffer, sir. And, sir, about this detention..."
Here was the answer to Mr. Wilkins' dilemma. It was his cue, and he took it.
"Ah, yes, the detention," he said. "Well, now, we've just witnessed an extremely commendable action on Jennings' part. And so, in recognition of this, I shall cancel the detention for tomorrow afternoon." The dormitory waved their sponge bags around their heads in appreciation. "And I'll go further," Mr. Wilkins added generously. "The match against Bracebridge will take place as arranged. The cancellation is, cancelled." This was cheered to the echo, and Mr. Wilkins left the boys making arrangements to have the spider stuffed and exhibited in the school museum. To prepare it for this unlikely destiny, Mr. Wilkins took the spider, safe in its tumbler, along to Mr. Carter.
"What?" he gasped when Mr. Carter told him the truth about the spider. "Right. I'll see that Jennings doesn't get away with this. It's deceit. It's deceitful."
"I don't think I'd take the matter any further," said Mr. Carter. "You see, quite by accident, Jennings found out that your scratching of the football match was, well, not cricket. So, all things considered," Mr. Carter went on, "I think it'd be better to let sleeping dogs lie. Don't you?"
"Hmm,"
said Mr. Wilkins. He had stopped fuming and become thoughtful.
"Yes, perhaps you're right, Carter," he said slowly. "Perhaps you're right."
Jennings Goes to School was adapted by Ed Thomason and the book by Anthony Buckridge. The reader was Stephen Fry, and the producer was Anne Hines.